a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
We'll call the Legislative Procedures Committee to order. Just a reminder that we are live on the internet this morning, and the Secretary will start with the roll.
Senators Brown.
Here.
Ferrix.
Here.
Heineman.
Here.
Olson.
Here.
Putnam. Rave.
Here.
Cronin.
Here.
Fargin, Representatives Fargin.
Here.
Gosch.
Here.
Hunhoff.
Here.
Hunt.
Here.
Lust.
Here.
Roush.
Here.
Senator Gray.
Here. We have a quorum. Looking at the agenda, you should all have an agenda in front of you. Is there any, are there any deletions, additions, any changes or amendments to the agenda today? Okay, last chance. We will proceed with this agenda then. Before you are several proposals. Let's start with a discussion and action on extension of bill filing deadlines for the 2012 session. Mr. Fry, Director Fry, would you like to explain what we're trying, what we're doing here?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we looked at the at two things, one, how the dates fell from the calendar that this committee adopted last year, and the rush of bill drafts, and the concern over the length of the session, since very few of the current legislature has had any experience with a 35-day session, we staffed it and determined that you should have the opportunity to extend the bill filing deadlines. They come very rapidly in a 35-day session. Plus, frankly, you will get better work product out of the LRC if we have one more weekend in there to draft bills, especially if there's a rush at the end. So the proposal that is before you is a proposal to move the bill filing deadlines, both the unlimited deadline for the deadline for unlimited bill filing and the deadline for the final introduction of the three additional legislative bills, 2 days further down the calendar. And we've adjusted other dates. The crossover date remains the same. And, of course, obviously, the end of the session remains the same. So the only thing that we are changing is the last day for filing, which was the 19th. We have for unlimited filing, we moved it from the 19th to Monday the 23rd. We took the all bill drafts with sponsors, which is more an administrative task, and actually moved that to the 24th. We should be fine there. And then we took the final day, your last chance to drop in a bill, and move that from the, I believe, from the 25th to the 20, or excuse me, the 24th to the 26th on the new calendar. So as it turns out, you will have an extra 2 days, and in the case of unlimited bill filing, you will actually have a weekend for consultation with your constituents. So we have basically moved those particular items to legislative days later in the session, in hopes that everyone will have opportunity then to adjust to a what will be a rapid fire session. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have to say.
Director Fry, one question. In terms of your internal deadline for LRC research and drafting, when would that be?
Our internal deadline would move to the 24th of January for all the bill drafts with sponsors. Internally, we, of course, will have everything ready for people by the 23rd. We'll try to have everything ready in advance of that date, but it depends on when we get them. It's somewhat of an outside-driven process, but it does give us that Saturday and Sunday in there. If everybody gets us their requests for unlimited bill introduction by Friday, the close of business on Friday the 20th, we should have their drafts ready for them and in good form when they return on Monday morning. So they'll have Monday morning then to receive jacketed bills and drop them.
Thank you. Is there discussion on this proposal or questions? Senator Rave.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I haven't studied it a lot, but looking at it here, and this obviously the concern is not backing off the filing deadline, but the limited number of committee hearings we have by doing this. And I understand why we went with the 35-day session, with the budget constraints that we had. But I think this points out that why we should at least, I think the 38-day session worked very well. But, I mean, I'll support the proposal because we need to get, we do need a little more time for filing. But this, there's going to be an immense amount of pressure on committees to get through bills. And I think that does not do any good to the process by forcing committees to hustle through bills when we got three meetings left before crossover. So I'll support it because we need to do it, but I think this is a good discussion for when we meet this fall about going back to at least a 38-day session or possibly 40. But that's all I have, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Senator Rave, that's a good point. I guess I would urge leadership at this point that have your committee chairs start working through bills soon and encourage your membership to file their bills when they're ready, not wait until the last minute. That'll help speed along the process. Other discussion or questions? Is there a motion?
Second.
We have a motion by Representative Lust, a second by Senator Frerichs to adopt the proposed calendar change. We'll make this a roll call vote. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Aye.
Frerichs? Aye.
The proposal passes. Next on the agenda is discussion and action on proposed addition of a confidentiality provision to joint rules. Has that been distributed yet?
It has not.
Okay, I will turn it over to Representative Roush, Speaker Roush, to make some comments on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As we've gone through this last off-season and some of the questions that arised with some constitutionality, I thought it would be appropriate to have our confidentiality, to have our LRC and our staff to at least put in writing the rules in which they currently operate, what their standard operating procedure is. I don't want to adopt it as policy, but I wanted to put it on here and bring attention to it to let the legislators know that our staff does operate with confidentiality, and this would be their best way on to explain what and how they operate, what they feel, and I would just like this to be a public record, not adopted as their policy. They obviously need to be able to do their business, but to explain to the legislators and maybe anybody else concerned that they are very concerned to confidentiality, and this is the process in which they typically operate under. So it's more informational this morning, Mr. Chair, but we would stand by, I guess, Director Fry also. We'd stand by for any questions if people would have them.
Any discussion and or questions on the confidentiality policy?
If not, Mr. Chair, thank you. And I guess I would offer that we make this available to any legislator that would like a copy just to understand what LRC operates, what their guiding principles are for their confidentiality.
Director Fry, maybe you could provide a little information about your policy within the LRC, and I assume this was written and drafted by you and your staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, it was drafted by our staff. We did, it essentially expresses in writing the policy that has always been, you know, followed by LRC. We then vetted it in front of the, in front of a number of the research members of the staff, as well as the Chief of Fiscal Research, to see if there were things that we could add or clarify. We also took a look at what some other states do. They are all over the board as far as length. Ours will be one of the shorter ones. There are states that have up to 18 or 20 pages on their confidentiality policy. We decided that was probably counterproductive. But in expressing this, we decided to enumerate them in four subsections to try and make it as clear as possible. It is the policy that we follow, and it is the policy that we think will effectively ensure the professionalism and the appropriateness of the process itself, protect all legislators, and protect the staff, as well as make the staff aware of exactly what their obligations and duties are. So we think it is, for all its brevity, a very complete and comprehensive expression of how we want to proceed. It makes sure, it ensures that the communications, when they are supposed to be confidential, when the legislature wants them to be confidential, are exactly that. And it still allows the staff to do their work. And sometimes their work will include oversight by their managers, so that's included as an element in there as well. You cannot have, you know, that kind of a good professional staff without ensuring that, that there is at least one edit involved. And so we have provided for that. But it allows both the fiscal and the research staff to do their work and to provide a good work product to each individual legislator at a time, in a timely manner, and at a time when the legislator wants to make it public. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Director Fry. Is there any further discussion and or questions on this policy? Seeing none, we'll move on to, yes, Senator Frerichs.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Maybe a question for Director Fry. What would be the result if there happened to be violation, I guess, of these? I mean, it would obviously be, it'd be not following joint rules if that's, of course, if it's adopted to that extent, or, you know, however, what are some of the, what are we looking at as far as violations wise on this?
May I, Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
In response, Senator, since it would be a responsibility of the staff to follow this particular policy, it's basically a requirement of your professional status as a staff member to observe all of the components of this confidentiality policy. If it were breached, that would be cause then for personnel action, up to and including termination.
Senator Frerichs, anything further? Any further discussion? Further discussion, questions? Okay, seeing none, we'll move down to the agenda to discussion on proposed amendment to JR6C-1, fiscal note on cost to defend certain legislation. Representative Blake, would you like to come forward and discuss this? I think everybody does have a copy, should have a copy in front of them.
No. Thank you. Representative Susie Blake, good morning and thank you, members of the committee. I bring before you proposed amendment to Joint Rule 6C-1. Any bill of questionable constitutionality which may be subject to litigation shall include a fiscal note to determine the probable cost to the state of defending such litigation. I believe this to be a common sense amendment, pretty simple, pretty straightforward, one that could help our legislators be the best stewards possible of our state's limited resources. We run a pretty tight ship with our budget. We don't have a lot of excess. Then I would say it behooves us, all of us, to always be looking for places and ways that we can save money so that we can allocate that money to the use of as many citizens as possible in the most productive and positive way possible. I think this is especially true after the last couple years when we've asked our citizens to make life-changing decisions based on the budgets we've put out. And I know our constituents expect us to be prudent and as fiscally responsible as we can with the tax dollars that they send to us. Secondly, we as a state obviously believe that this is an important thing to do. Fiscal consideration on any bill is important. We already use this process because we know it's important to pay attention to how we're spending our money and what impact that will have. So this is not a new concept or a new idea. This is just an extension of something that a process that we already are using. And lastly, this amendment does not prohibit any legislation from being offered. It doesn't say that if there are fiscal considerations, you are no longer able to offer that. Any legislation can still be proposed. This just gives us more information to base our decisions on. I myself have a bill that I was advised may have these kinds of considerations. It made me stop and think. It made me take a second look. Is this important for the greater good, or is this too exclusive? I need to have another conversation with my constituent. Are there alternative ways that I could look at that may not carry that kind of a consequence? I haven't decided whether or not I will still offer the bill, but it did make me stop and think and ask myself the harder questions. The reason I became interested in this actually started when last fall my husband and I went out to dinner, and the gal that waited on us was someone I knew to be a teacher, and I'd known her for quite a while. And I said, "Gee, Terry, I didn't know that you had a new vocation." And she said, "Oh, no, I'm still teaching." And I said, "Oh, really?" And she said, "Yeah." She was kind of embarrassed, but she said, last year one of my kids had some serious health issues, and I had medical bills, and with the budget constraints and not getting any raises, we just couldn't make it. This lady is a single mom. She has three kids, and now she's teaching all day and three nights a week, and once on the weekend she goes out and tries to make more money. She is being fiscally responsible, trying to pay her bills. She can expect nothing less from us. It isn't as if the conversation doesn't take place. It does, but sometimes it's a handful of people that it takes place between. This would allow all of us as legislators to be more informed. And then I saw an article in the Rapid City, it was from the Rapid City Journal in the Argus, on legal fees for this year. And we will be asked as a legislature to add $1.043 million to our state's Extraordinary Litigation Fund, which pays for the legal costs above and beyond ordinary costs. We had $150,000 in that account in July, but costs are expected to run about $1.225 million over the next year. It's not unusual, I guess, to have extraordinary litigation fees every year, but it made me wonder, what do we pay? What are those fees, and how much are we paying every year over and above? So I got some information from the Attorney General's office, and I have a handout that I will let you take a look at, because I called and asked, are we talking about one issue here? Are we talking about litigation on one issue? And he said, "Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not." I said, "Can you give me some examples?" And so your handout, you can see on your handout, and these go back just to, I asked for 5 years. You can see what a wide array and gamut these cover. Everything from the Department of Corrections to smoking ban to constitutionality of school busing laws, zoning laws, redistricting, Planned Parenthood, and even our retirement system benefits. So there's lots of areas that these constitutional challenges come in. I asked for what is the figure we've spent in the past 5 years from the Office of Risk Management in this extraordinary litigation fund, and you can see the figure on here is $4.579 million. And when they explained that to me, I wasn't aware that that money is over and above what the Attorney General's office spends. The Attorney General's office has a budget for this kind of litigation. They pay for the attorneys, however many they have to employ. They pay for the hours. They pay for the research. This is just over and above what those costs are. So I said, and he said, this not only is a partial picture, because a lot of this legislation is ongoing. He told me about the Lone Tree case, which went on in our state for 18 years and cost close to $8 million. And many of you are attorneys. You know there is no, you can't say this is the end date. The end date is when the court has made a decision and it's a settled, done deal. So he said costs continue to accrue on these things. I asked, just in the past couple years, what kinds of things have we had to include in this? And you can see the things at the bottom. Once again, what a wide variety of issues we're talking about here. Everything from taxidermy laws to adult businesses, visitation rights, custody rights. It's a pretty wide and varied list that we're speaking of. Just before I drove up to Sioux Falls, I stopped to pick up something at Shopko, and the lady that was the cashier, I know works in the school administration. She's a secretary in the school administrator's office. And I said, I was just visiting with her, and I said, Bert, I didn't know you worked here. And she said, well, I haven't. I just started. She said, I work three nights a week. Doing okay, as long as you held us to, you know, we didn't get any raises. I could readjust and tighten my belt a little bit, but when the cuts started to come down, I couldn't make it. So now this lady spends all day at her job, and she said, frankly, I make more money as a cashier. Spends all day at her job and then goes out three nights a week just to make it. I think this amendment would allow us as legislators the chance to be better informed. It would give everyone a chance to be in on the conversation. So we would know. It doesn't determine what we will do. We still have that option. But it does make us better informed. We ask a lot from our citizens when we put out budgets like we have over the last couple years. And they rally. They rise to the cause. And they do the best they can, because that's what we do. That's how we are. I think they have a right to expect us to do the same thing, to do the best that we can. I think this would give us a chance to step back, assess the possible consequences, to include everyone in the conversation, and to enable us to make better decisions. I thank you for your time and your attention, and I will step down with that and be available for questions.
Thank you, Representative Blake. Is there further testimony today?
There is.
Senator Buell?
I'll be brief. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, members of the committee. I'm Senator Angie Buell from District 15, and I'm here to respectfully request your favorable support for the amendment to Rule 60-1. I think that this helps us as legislators make better informed decisions. And without repeating what Representative Blake said, I know that as a new legislator, I look for as much information as possible when making decisions on bills. And understanding the implications of possible lawsuits that may or may not come forward, I think it'd be helpful for me as a new legislator, as well as many of my freshman colleagues. One thing I think that always comes up in this discussion is probably, you know, who decides whether it's constitutional or not? Who decides what's questionable? Luckily, we don't have to. We don't have to get a specific decision on, you know, whether it is or it is not constitutional from any one legislator, from the Attorney General's office, anything like that. It's simply whether or not there are questions, and the procedure for how to determine that is already in Rule 60-1. When a legislator decides to move it to request a fiscal note, this would be a similar procedure. So I think it's something that's already in our framework as a legislative process, and I would like to see this become part of that conversation as well. So I request your favorable support, and thank you.
Thank you, Senator Buell. Is there any further testimony this morning? Any further testimony? Representative Gibson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and distinguished members of the committee. Representative Peggy Gibson from District 22. And I will not repeat what Representative Blake nor Representative Buell said. I just want to make the point that we as legislators really seriously need to consider whether or not the exposure to litigation costs is worth the price of a bill, because we have some extraordinarily high costs out there in litigation in the state of South Dakota right now. Rule 6C1-1, the amendment to it is only to determine whether or not a bill can be litigated. Litigation, of course, is what determines constitutionality. So I just want to make that point. I would respectfully request your consideration, favorable consideration of this amendment, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Representative Gibson.
And a representative of the Attorney General's office is here, too. They were consulted. So if you would like him to make a comment, he would be willing to do that.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any further testimony today? Good morning, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, honorable members of the committee, Representative Bob Dielstra, Legislative District 9. Today I come in favor of the proposed amendment to Joint Rule 6C-1, and I will be extremely brief with my comments, by the way. To me, it encourages full disclosure in the legislative process. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further testimony today on the proposal? Any further testimony? Seeing none, we'll close testimony and open it up to committee discussion. Is there any discussion and or questions from the committee? Representative Hunt.
Mr. Chairman, could we first ask a question or
yes, two? Questions, yes, absolutely.
If I might, I have a couple of questions for Representative Blake.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Blake, the first sentence of 6C-1 says that any bill or resolution pre-filed or introduced which has an effect on the revenues, the expenditures, or fiscal liability of the state shall include a fiscal note incorporating an estimate of such effect. I believe that with your proposed amendment, you're saying that a bill involving questionable constitutionality has a fiscal impact upon the state. Is that not correct?
No. If there are questions on the constitutionality, we would determine that, and then a fiscal note would be brought about to see what it would cost the state.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman? But is it not true that that first sentence says any impact, fiscal impact whatsoever, for whatever reason, on revenues or expenditures, basically shall include a fiscal note? Isn't that already in 6C-1?
It is. But this would be before those bills reach the floor. This would be from the very onset of the bill.
But it would still be required, if there is any sort of impact before any vote was taken, for example, on the floor.
If it were called,
have that fiscal impact.
Excuse me.
Is that not correct?
If it were called into question.
Well, it doesn't say whether it was called into question. It just says specifically if it has an impact, if it has an effect. That's what the first sentence says. What I'm driving at, Representative, is the fact that really we could put a laundry list together here of all kinds of things that have an impact on pieces of legislation, changes in technology, changes in personality, enlargement, reduction of government, etc. We could develop a whole laundry list. And is it not better to have one sentence, as we have in the beginning, which takes care of all possible financial effects? Why are we duplicating just for one particular issue?
Oh, I don't believe this is one particular issue. I believe that this is any questionable constitutionality in any litigation or any bill. And what it does is it opens the conversation so that everyone is aware of what that would be. From the onset, as in, I have a bill proposed, I'm being told that it may have that impact.
Well, again, in 6C1-1, it says a fiscal note can be requested by any member if supported by one-fifth of the members of the House, etc. I mean, we already have a system for requiring a fiscal note.
And I think this extends that. It is my belief that this extends that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could, I'd like to ask Mr. Frey a question about this rule.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Frey, under the current rule, given that first sentence that Representative Hunt alluded to, how many bills now, if you know, get a fiscal note attached to them under that current language, those bills that are pre-filed or introduced, which have an effect on revenues?
If I might, Mr. Chairman. At the current time, I can't tell you the exact number. Not every bill that could have a possible impact gets a fiscal note prepared for it. What the staff, rather than making a value judgment as to whether or not there's a fiscal impact, really waits for the body to request them. So we don't automatically do them. We wait until you have the vote or a chair or a presiding officer requests them. Part of that is just practicality because if any bill which possibly might have an impact needs a fiscal note, we would be doing nothing but fiscal notes. So we wait until the body makes a finding that they need a fiscal note. As to the number, it varies from session to session. I think they're probably, I shouldn't speculate. Certainly, I think we probably do less than 100 fiscal notes, probably less than 50.
Representative Gosch, anything further?
One more. Just with every statute that we enact, potentially the court could rule it is unconstitutional. Even statutes which are facially constitutional could be deemed to be unconstitutional as they're applied. That being the case, arguably every bill would have to have a fiscal note under this policy because every statute is questionably constitutional under the judicial review principles. Would you have the staff available now to write fiscal notes in that case, essentially writing fiscal notes for almost every bill, if not every bill?
If I might, Mr. Chairman, if we were required to write a fiscal note for every bill, we would not have the staff to do that. Whether this rises to that level is someone else's call, not mine.
Representative Gosch, anything further? Representative Fargin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. After listening to the last couple of people discuss the current 6C-1 and then the possibility that that any bill could be questioned by the courts, and how I kind of take a look at this is a little bit of common sense too. When we're looking when the LRC is developing these bills for the state legislators, and the LRC or maybe even the state legislators might consider this as being maybe questionable the constitutionality of this bill, that's when it would be tied the fiscal note would be tied to it. That's the difference between 6C-1, which anybody on the floor or anybody could try to tie a fiscal note, and how this bill would be developed in the LRC and get tied with the questionable, the constitutionality of the bill and a fiscal note. And that's the difference, how I see it, between a normal bill on the House floor and how this is also challenging the questionability or the constitutionality of it and the fiscal note. And, you know, just with common sense, yes, every bill can be questioned by any court and taken to court, but, you know, there's bills that are higher percentage than others. So that's how I kind of look at it. And so I kind of like this amendment and for this joint rule.
Further discussion? Sure. Representative Hunoff.
Chairman, could I ask a question of the LRC
yes.
director?
Mr. Yes, you may.
Do you know of the standard practice? Has there ever been a fiscal note requested based on questions of constitutionality and court costs? Is that a standard procedure, or has it ever been done?
I'm not aware of anything that was raised in regard to that. Mr. Chairman, I'm not aware of any instance where it was when that was raised. There have always been discussions about those costs, but I don't remember that we've prepared any fiscal notes. But I could be wrong about that. But I don't remember a specific instance where that has been done.
Yes, Representative Hunoff.
And I can't remember one either, and if someone does, let me know. That's why we need to be specific in the statute, or in the rule, I should say, I would say. And I think, as Representative Fargin suggested, there's a certain self-discipline that always plays out in the legislature. I mean, if every legislator brought an amendment to the rules, we'd be here for 105 hours. But there's self-discipline. One person brought a good rule. And I think it is a good rule. I mean, the one thing I like about the legislature today compared to 20 years ago is that there's really been a movement toward information and openness, and that's been a really good thing, and it's been very bipartisan. And as Representative Blake pointed out, I mean, we're spending a lot of money on court costs. This is a big issue, probably a bigger issue than a lot of the fiscal notes that are requested. And it's certainly not a Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative issue. If you look through where we spent the money, I mean, nobody should take offense at this, I don't think, by any means, because we're spending money for all sorts of things, some I like and some I don't like, and I'm sure the same would be true of you. So I would urge approval of the motion. Or I guess there's not a motion yet, but I would move approval of the rule.
Chairman? Further discussion. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess maybe it would help if I could ask one clarification question from Representative Blake.
Yes, that'd be fine.
Thank you. So, Representative Blake, if I understand this correctly, I'm really trying to understand the process or the procedure in which you envision this happening. And from what I'm hearing, it sounds like I would go in to have a bill drafted at LRC, at which point, if I were working with Ruben would make a determination of whether or not the draft that I had was constitutional or unconstitutional or potentially questionable constitutionally, and Ruben would then decide that a fiscal note would be attached to the bill that I was going to take to go get introduced? No.
No.
So at which point does this occur?
He may advise you that there may be questions.
As he does with every
right.
bill that I do now.
Right.
Okay.
At that point, you can decide whether or not you want to continue and propose that legislation. And at that point, any member of the committee that sees this as questionably constitutional can ask for a fiscal note on it. The committee chairman or whatever house is hearing that bill, if they are supported by one-fifth of the members, can ask for a fiscal note.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Senator Brown.
Which is the current procedure that we have right now.
Correct. This just okay. extends that.
So I guess one more follow-up, Mr.
Chair. Yes, Senator Brown.
This past year, did you request any fiscal notes on legislation that you saw questionable constitutionally?
This past year?
Yes.
Personally?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Further discussion? Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In my practice of law, I frequently have people, when they're talking of litigation, ask me what it's going to cost. And I usually sidestep that issue because I truly do not know. I sidestep it by saying I bill at X number of dollars an hour. I may be involved in 100 hours or 200 hours. The point I'm making is, even though as an attorney and working in this area, I cannot tell anyone what it's going to cost. And I'm thinking here of what is the LRC going to use for a criteria to determine what something is going to cost. I would assume they would call the Attorney General's office and say, how much time do you think you're going to spend on this case? In which case, the Attorney General's office is going to say, well, are we going to settle before trial? Are we going to settle at trial? Are we going to have a trial? Are we going to have an appeal? In other words, nobody really knows. In the handout that was provided to us out of the Rapid City Journal, down at the bottom, last full paragraph, it says it isn't clear what those costs could indicate. A three-panel judge on the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals struck down part but not all of that law in September. The entire Eighth Circuit is scheduled to hear the case January 9th, which was yesterday. Now, the point I want to make there is that provides an incomplete picture of attorney's fees in that particular case, because the meeting yesterday of the Eighth Circuit was an en banc meeting, and almost an unheard-of procedure. And this is the second en banc proceeding in this one lawsuit, all of which indicates that the Eighth Circuit probably is not going to support the trial court and is probably going to throw out everything, in which case there isn't going to be a basis for any Planned Parenthood claim for damages. Now, can I say that for a certainty? No, but that's the way the litigation is heading, and that's what makes this whole issue very, very difficult. We do not want to base our passage of legislation on a law estimated cost of litigation fee, because we don't know what that really is. Are we 5 years later going to come back and say, oh, we set the figure too high, we probably should have passed that law, now we go back and introduce it? This is a very nebulous area, and I think that the existing first sentence in 6C1 clearly does everything that we can do under the present circumstances to be conscientious and good stewards of the state's money, without going in and making guesstimates on something such as key litigation on a number of issues. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hunt. Senator Putnam, you had your hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could, just some comments, and I would have a question for Representative Blake. The comments are I can't support the amendment to this rule, for a couple of reasons, and one of them is the fact that the first sentence really covers everything that we do. The question of constitutionality in the rule probably is secondary, if you will, and it would have to be an effort be made just to determine whether or not it was constitutional or not. Off the top of my head, I can certainly probably think of three or four laws and statutes that we have in place now that may not be constitutional and could possibly be challenged at any time. One of them I would remember in the past was, of course, when the lawsuit to our schools, K-12 schools. I would not have thought for a moment when I voted for the formula at that time that it could possibly be a lawsuit and that there may be a cost. And it would be very difficult to determine that. But I would have a question for Representative Blake, if I could.
Yes. Go ahead, Senator Putnam.
Thank you. Representative Blake, in bringing this, the question in my mind comes up, and you've heard it from some others here talking today, if a bill is questionably constitutionally, and I, who a layperson who knows very little about the Constitution, were to make that judgment, do I have the authority of just a legislator in saying I think that it's unconstitutional and then I want to know how much it would cost if it were challenged? Is that how you see this set up? Or do you see a group of legislators, senator, and House members making this judgment? How do you see this as going forward with any layperson in the legislature describing themselves as a constitutional expert and suggesting it's not constitutional.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. I don't feel that we would put ourselves in the position of being experts on the Constitution. And I think the questionable part of this is we don't ask someone to determine the constitutionality because that's done in a court. We ask for advice on whether or not there is substantial question or concern over the constitutionality. And that we would ask of the people that understand that and the Attorney General's office.
If I could, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Putnam.
Substantial questions would be more than five, less than 20. I mean, I might have a question and my seatmate may have a question about it, but would that be substantial in your mind as to call in the
you
fact?
You have the right to do that.
I'm not suggesting it's not a right. I just wondered what the word meant, substantial, and the way it's written.
You would have the right to do that as an individual.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Further discussion?
I have a comment, if I could, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Putnam.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Blake, for bringing it also. Even if we wrote a fiscal note on every bill that we had, and we have suggested in rule that that can be done by request, even if we did that, the ability for our staff to determine the litigation just by calling up someone else and adding it to their budget, I just almost see that as impossible. I mean, I really don't know what the how we would frame that and give that advice to our director of LRC or any other agency to come up with these, to come up with how that can be done. I know that it's been done on some cases, and we fell short. That's why we have this litigation fund. And so it's very tough for me to see how this could fit in. I'm also curious as to whether or not we would at that time, if we were to do this by law or rule, whether then we would go out and put a fund in place and stock it to be on the safe side. Pretty soon here we have a fund set aside again, another one of these little funds setting over there that we have money in anticipation of litigation, which in itself is a little bit tough to do. You're taking taxpayers' money and putting it in a fund in anticipation of problems that we cause. That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So that's why we have the litigation fund, and we backfill it if we need it. So it would be difficult for me to support the amendment as we see it. But thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Putnam. At this time, I'd like to close to questions and just move on to discussion and or action. So Representative Lust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick couple comments regarding discussion. I take a little different tack with my clients when they come and ask me how much it's going to cost, and I say it depends on the other side and what they do. And this would be particularly appropriate in this instance. One, you don't know if it'll be challenged constitutionally. Two, you don't know what tactics they're going to use, how many experts they're going to have, what appeals they're going to take, those type things. So to come to a determination as to what this may cost is virtually impossible. Two, there's nothing that prevents a legislator from going to the Attorney General's office right now and saying, in your mind, if this got challenged, how much would this cost? What's the AG going to do? He's going to look back at prior experience and say, well, when we've had these things brought in the past, here's what it has cost. That's something that you can bring as a legislator up in testimony at the bill hearing or on the floor. So I think that nullifies the need for any of these amendments. It's impractical to get an estimate, and two, to the extent you need one, you can get one already. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative. We have a motion and a second to move the proposed amendment to Joint Rule 6C-1. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Hanoff.
Thank you, and I'll be very brief. I think we've heard this pretty well. But I'm sure, and I would guess at least, and I haven't had a lot of experience at this, but I would guess that when a client goes to an attorney, and the attorneys can speak to this, that you do at some point give them some kind of a rough estimate. I would certainly ask for one and expect one, and it may be a big variable, but at least some information is better than no information, and I think that's what this is all about. You know, some kind of a guess, some kind of a range is better than nothing at all. And, you know, if you look at this, I mean, this is serious stuff. If you look at the amount of money that we've spent, $1 million this year, that's real money that could have been used, as we all know, in a lot of different areas in the budget. So I think it's just a good faith effort. I don't think it was intended to be this controversial by any means. It's just a good faith effort to get as much information as we can as we weigh some of these really controversial bills. It's as simple as that. It's about information. So I would move or urge you to support the amendment. Thank you.
Further discussion and or action? Speaker Roush.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I would ask the committee to resist the motion. I think it's already there. I applaud Representative Blake and those that testified that it is a nice reminder to the legislators here that bills that they do bring oftentimes do have costs, and to make sure you weigh your thought of what the cost might be to the benefit that might become of your legislation. And I think we do forget that sometimes. And so I applaud that. I think what you're asking here is already covered. In my opinion, it's covered in the first line, as Representative Hunt was getting at in his questioning. If the LRC, if our staff is not the ones to make that determination and it goes to the committee and that's where the process starts, that we already do that. And so I think it's already covered. I applaud the to bringing light to the fact that legislation up here does have a cost or can have a cost, and to make sure that representatives are aware of that when they're looking at things. Yeah, so I applaud that, but I think it's covered, and I would ask the committee to resist the motion.
Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is only a fiscal note. I think that's it's easy to get caught up in all of these other issues as far as what are going to be the effects, but when it really comes down to it, it's simply information, but it's information that obviously is supported by the staff that we have here that are at our fingertips as legislators to utilize. And so I guess I'm a little bit concerned why there's so many issues as far as being able to have some very good information. If you look at it from a budget standpoint, if there is situations that the Attorney General obviously will have to budget his staff when he has had to deal with any sort of litigation. And so we know that there are some numbers that have to be worked in the background. And the question comes back to whether or not those numbers and whoever may have the numbers in mind based on what the costs will be and the ballpark figures, it's whether or not that's going to be provided when the legislation is before us as legislators. And so that's where it comes back to. And right now, small business owners, farmers, and everybody else out there are doing their budgeting for this next year, being as we just turned over the calendar year. Maybe they even had that done with before. And we as a state should continue to look at how we can use the resources that are available to us that we know are very limited.
Thank you, Senator Frerichs. Chair would just make a couple comments. Very lively discussion. Way to start off this session, folks. Should be a lively one based on what we're doing here this morning. I think a very legitimate discussion. I spent 8 years in the Attorney General's office where the attorneys in our office were fighting these, and it does cost the state a lot of money every year, and certainly over the course of a number of years on a variety of issues. At first, you certainly think about the big ones, school funding, abortion bills, things like that, but there's certainly a lot of different issues that we see. But I would remind the committee that we do have current rules, and not only the rule that Representative Hunt pointed out, but we have a pretty low standard as it is. Right now, 20% of the body can request a fiscal note. 7 on the Senate side, 14 on the House side. It's a pretty low standard. I'm not sure exactly how to read the proposed amendment, but it could be as low as lower that standard to as low as one person, I think. Well, what I'm saying is that 20% is a pretty low standard, especially with bills that aren't necessarily party line bills for the most part. I think specifically on abortion bills; those are certainly not party line bills. Furthermore, the presiding officer, myself, and the speaker are able to request a fiscal note from the beginning, and then I would remind the committee that 6C-4 committees may request a fiscal note as well. So the point here is there's a lot of ways to get a fiscal note attached to a bill, and I don't know that this amendment is necessary. With that, I would ask that the secretary call the roll for the proposed rule, joint rule 6C-1.
Senator Gray.
Here.
Senators Brown?
No.
Frerichs?
Aye.
Heineman?
No.
Olson? Putman?
No.
Rave?
No.
Cronin?
No.
Bargeon?
Aye.
Gosch?
Nay.
Representative Hunoff?
Aye.
Hunt?
No.
Lust?
No.
Roush?
No.
Senator Gray?
No.
Three ayes, 11 noes.
Motion fails. Senator Rave?
Substitute motion. Move to the 41st day.
Just a point of clarification. I think it just dies. It's not a bill, so I think the motion just dies. Thank you. Any further business before the committee today? We've come to the end of our agenda. We didn't approve anything at the beginning of our agenda to add. So, is there any further discussion at this point? Seeing none, a motion to adjourn would be in order. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed nay. We are adjourned. Thank you.